This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Welcome to the Dave Sinclair, Lincoln and Ford Sports on a Sunday morning.
Here's the pitch. A swing and a high fly ball.
This could be trouble. It's at the wall.
And it's a gunner!
He scores!
Now. Sports on a Sunday morning on America's Sports Voice, KMOX.
Welcome back, everybody. 6 after the hour, 11 o'clock. We start things off with the head coach of the St. Louis Blues. He is Mike Yeo. Mike, good morning, sir.
Good morning. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. So how would you spend this off day? I mean, you guys have been on the road quite a bit. You've got a couple of days off before Chicago rolls into town. So your first day back off the trip, how will Mike Yeo try and spend it?
Well, actually, I'm in the office right now, so
okay.
I don't have a real exciting day planned today, but it'll be a short day. It'll be a quick day in here, but we got a good week to plan as far as our practices. Finally, get a couple of practices here. It's something we haven't had in the last little bit. So when you have two practices in this NHL schedule, you have to take advantage of it.
And that's something that we sometimes take for granted because of the way the schedule works. You have to work smart and you have to work short because you just don't have as much time. The old hour and a half, 2 hour practices, those are things of the past. So how do you try and get as much in where you can obviously accomplish something, but also not burn out guys because you're on the ice quite a bit just even playing games?
It's the old rest versus rust debate that we're always trying to figure out what we need more of. No matter what, you can't play this game. It's so demanding if you don't have the energy to skate, to create turnovers, to check, to hold off checkers, whatever the case is. And we just came off a stretch where we played 5 games in 8 days. So obviously you don't get a lot of practice time in between there. We had one practice while we were on the road. And even at that was kind of a light one. So I think you can take advantage of your game day skates a little bit. You have to spend a lot of time with the video, making sure that you're pointing out the habits, making sure that the players have the right focus going into every game. But again, when you get the opportunity to practice, you take advantage of it. And then obviously in two practices, we're not going to be able to work every aspect of our game. So it's about prioritizing what areas do we need, what areas of special teams, what areas of our 5-on-5 play do we need heading into our next game against Chicago.
And let's throw this into the equation. You have some young players, some new faces on your team. Where do you try and find the time to teach as well? Because these guys are trying to figure their way through the National Hockey League in their first tour of duty, and they still need to learn a few things along the way. So how do you find time for that?
Well, the best teaching moments are always in-game for me personally. Those are the experiences that it's fresh in their mind. They come right back to the bench, and I like to think that we don't do it in a demeaning or a way that's going to hurt their confidence. It's just matter of fact, and it's just teaching for us. But when a player makes a mistake, I believe in pointing it out. And also, on the other side of the coin, if they go out and they do something right, or if you want to reinforce something that, habit-wise, that they're doing the right thing, then you point that out as well. So I believe the communication in-game is really important. Then, obviously, the use of video. It's a great tool for your team. But that individual teaching, when you're spending that one-on-one time with the player, and just to get a sense of what their reads are and what situations, what they were thinking, when they made a certain play or what they were seeing on the ice, that's good quality time with the players.
There's so much information available to coaches in sports. You pick one and they've got a whole book's worth of information. How do you try and disseminate what actually applies compared to what the numbers say? Because you still have to pay attention to the players, and there's no meter on measuring heart and desire and instinct. So how do you try and balance the two?
Well, I think we've been able to decipher sort of what stats we really believe in. Analytics are available for us, and absolutely we pay attention to them. For me, you know, analytics, they should, you know, they should get you thinking, and they should get you questioning certain things that you may be doing or things that you could possibly do differently. But they shouldn't be decision makers. It should be just something that gets you thinking. And then obviously, you know, we've got a good quality staff here that I use, all my assistants and whatnot. So that's, you're right. It's a matter of sorting through sort of all the resources you have, and then trying to find a way to make the best decisions with that.
Will you start to get some of your veterans back? You guys start off the season with a few injuries. How are they progressing?
We'll have a couple guys. We'll know a little bit more probably today, tomorrow. We've got a couple guys coming in today for some treatments, and that's not till 12 o'clock here. So we're not sure yet, but I know that they're getting closer, and definitely hoping for some good news here.
Who stood out for you as far as these young players? I mean, Blay has a chance to play last night, has a couple of great scoring opportunities. Vince Dunn seems like he's found a spot. And you've had some other kids you've had in and out of the lineup. But what is the one common challenge, though, you see with those young players?
It's always consistency with young players. That's always the biggest challenge. And for that reason, I would say probably Vince Dunn has been, you know, it's too small of a sample size for Sammy Blaze. He did a nice job. But what I've seen from Vince is that his game has been improving every game that he's played in. He's looked more and more like an NHL player every game. And I know we're still a long ways away. The league is still going to get better. But he's been able to show that three games in a row now, he's played at a real high level. I feel like every game that he's played in the last three has been his best of the season. And that's a good sign going forward.
Well, Mike, we won't keep you too long, and we appreciate you spending part of your morning with us. Get some work done and then get out of there and get ready for Chicago on Wednesday night. We thank you for your time, and we hope to see you soon.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me on.
Thank you, sir. That's Mike Yeo, the head coach for the St. Louis Blues. We'll talk a little baseball when we come back. The Arizona Fall League is underway, and we'll talk with Gary LaRock. He is the farm director for the St. Louis Cardinals, and he comes your way after we take this time out on KMOX.
Now, back to the Dave Sinclair, Lincoln, and Ford Sports on a Sunday morning on America's Sports Voice, KMOX.
16 after the hour of 11 o'clock, let's talk a little baseball with the farm director for the St. Louis Cardinals. He is Gary LaRock. Gary, good morning, sir.
Good morning, Mike. Thanks for having me.
Well, it's always good to visit with you, and I know you're a busy man because the Arizona Fall League is here. So for our listeners who aren't familiar with it, tell us about the league. How long is it? How many players can you contribute, and who are the managers and coaches?
Well, it's obviously the Fall League has always been a very productive winter league assignment for any of the players. What we've done in the past is had one of our coaches represent the Cardinals, and amongst the five teams that make up each club, ours is Surprise out in Arizona, which is the Kansas City-Texas complex. We have one coach this year. It's the hitting coach, Jobel Jimenez, who is our AA hitting coach. And so it's a wonderful assignment. Everybody looks forward to being in the Fall League. And so we have five teams that make up Surprise, and we have our instructors who visit out there throughout. And it's a six-week program that starts, it's 5 weeks plus, that starts October 10th as far as games go, and will end on November 16th with a playoff after that.
What Cardinal players will you have participating this year?
It's a very good group. Interestingly enough, for all of our fans in St. Louis, we are one of five teams with five representatives in our top 30 prospect rankings. So that's a real acknowledgement that, one, those players are ready for it, and two, to be in the Fall League and be close to the big leagues is also a great thing for them. But this year we have Sandy Alcantara, who our fans know pitched in September, was with a big club, moved up from Springfield. Jordan Hicks, one of our right-handed pitchers, one of our young pitchers, 21 years old. Jordan is also there, along with Josh Lucas, who spent time in the big leagues, and Arturo Reyes, who finished the season in Memphis with their very successful season there. So we have four pitchers. We have four regulars this year. We're allowed one extra taxi squad player, and this year we had the taxi squad player, but our three other players are Oscar Mercado, Edmundo Sosa, and Andrew Kinsner, our catcher from AA, and And then John Nagowski is a taxi squad player. So we're represented very well. They've gotten off to a solid start adjusting to the league and the challenges of the fall league. And as everyone knows, it's a wonderful league to prepare players for the big leagues.
You know, you mentioned Memphis and the outstanding season that they had, and everybody's heard that story. What other teams in the organization you felt had a real significant improvement?
Well, we came off of 2016 with five playoff teams. So when you mentioned significant improvement, you know, we always measure what we do based on who helps the major league club. Memphis certainly had a great year, and this year we had 11 new players make it to the big leagues for the first time, and obviously we're very, very pleased with that, but we also recognize the goal every year is to make sure that players help our major league club. So, but from a minor league perspective, we were very pleased that our clubs competed right to the end. Outside of Memphis winning the Coast League, Palm Beach won the Florida State League championship, which is a wonderful, wonderful accomplishment. Florida State League is a very challenging league. Peoria was in the playoffs. We were extremely pleased with our Midwest League team because it was so young. We're very young throughout the system. Our AA club in Springfield competed right to the last weekend and had a winning record for the year. And if you look into our short season clubs, State College was in it to the end. Johnson City hit a speed bump with the last 7 days, but they were headed for a potential playoff. So I'd have to say that they were very competitive. Players understand the importance of winning as part of development, and every club was right on track.
You know, Gary, we see where analytics has such an important impact on the game today, and with all the numbers to support different theories, do you find yourself and your group teaching the game differently now than maybe, let's say, 15 years ago, 10 years ago?
Well, I think what it does is it provides a wonderful, an additional and a wonderful tool for evaluations for our players. It does help us see things and understand things from an instruction standpoint. We are very supportive and always looking for an edge in that regard as far as how our instruction can work throughout the system. So young players right on through to the Memphis level, we spend a lot of time with them, having them understand the metrics, because for players to understand it means the staff has to understand it first. They have to teach it and certainly apply it to any instruction that has to be. And we've been very fortunate. We have a wonderful baseball development group in St. Louis, and we've all been extremely supportive, and it's been a wonderful evaluation tool for us.
And I would, that's a great point you make, teaching what you know to the players where because they're not exposed to it before they get to this level, where they don't fight it as much. And I'm sure they, the more they understand it, the more they embrace it, and perhaps the more success they'll have.
Well, you know, I really feel we not only embrace it, but, you know, you have to make every attempt as soon as you're aware of certain metrics that apply to players, of making sure you individualize the program for the mm-hmm. player. We spent a lot of time doing that. We, throughout the season, the first half of the season, every 3 weeks, we sit down with each player and individually discuss where he's at, what he's doing in terms of both a subjective opinion and then certainly the analytics that are provided. So when you do that, it builds a real confidence with the player that this is what the player is right now. And a big part of what development is for players to understand who they are. And the sooner they get that, the sooner they start to make adjustments. And this game's all about adjustments. And fortunately, we've got a wonderful staff and a great group of players that are willing to do it and have been doing it.
You mentioned adjustment, and with that sometimes comes position change. What players, if any, this year that you feel like maybe he might be better suited to help the organization if he's converted to another position?
Well, some of our younger players, we usually give a year to a year and a half to see how well they adjust and come into the system with the position in mind that they were drafted for. I look back to Carson Kelly, and as everyone remembers the story of Carson, he became a catcher after a period of time where he played third base right through the rookie league season in State College. That said, we've been very, very fortunate. This past year, one of our one of the players that has done extremely well and has made the transition is Oscar Mercado. Oscar this year went to the AA level after spending a brief period of time moving from shortstop to center field, and he's really taken to it defensively. And obviously for everyone who follows that Springfield club, he did very well offensively as well. So we're very pleased with that. One of the things we do internally is constantly try to provide the players in terms of where they are best suited to help and value for the Cardinals down the stretch. And we've been very fortunate that our players have adjusted so quickly. Oscar certainly is one of them. And now, of course, he's in the fall league playing there as well in the outfield.
You know, we're visiting with Gary LaRocque. He is the farm director for the St. Louis Cardinals. Gary, you know, everybody's in search of power and power hitters and launch angles and the way guys swing the bat these days. With that comes strikeouts as well. So for you, as you try and develop young players, and especially everybody's looking for a legitimate bat that can do some things, how do you try and decipher whether this guy has legitimate power and we can cut down on the strikeouts compared to the feast or famine guy who he hits him a long way, but he can also strike out the next three times he's at the plate?
Well, that certainly is a challenge that drives us day in and day out to individualize for a player. When we identify both subjectively, you know, clearly with scouting reports when a player starts, if a player has raw power, I think we've all had opportunities to see players come along with that true raw power who needed some adjustments. We sit down as a collective group, our staff and the player, and we talk to the player about the adjustments we think are going to be needed as the player moves forward. The answer to a lot of it is it's once it's identified, it's time, it's at bats, it's obviously the experience that goes into it. But we're constantly in search of making sure that we individualize a program for a player. So if a player is that potential and has that potential, that we don't lose it by not identifying it early enough. So we've been fortunate. Our hitting program continues to advance in the minor league level with staff that are paying a lot of attention to the metrics that are provided.
Gary, we thank you for your time today. It's always fun talking to you and finding out what the future looks like within the organization. So you'll spend time in Arizona and between there and Florida at this point. And do you have all your staff put together for next year?
We're close. We will be spending a lot of time in Arizona. You know, our roving instructors all visit in there. And so we have a lot of things going on. We currently have our instruction league in the Dominican Republic at our academy. Our fall instruction league that normally was held in Jupiter, we moved to January as a brand new mini camp, and we wanted to be creative with the idea that we could be more productive with an additional camp in January to prepare us for 2018. So we'll have a number of players involved in that. So it's a 12-month cycle, as you can well imagine, and we always each year have to start over and make sure we get it done.
Gary, as always, it's good to visit with you, sir, and hopefully we'll see you soon down the road.
Thanks, Mike. I appreciate the time.
Thank you, sir. That's Gary LaRocque. He is the farm director for the St. Louis Cardinals. As you can tell, he's got a lot going on in his life with regard to development. When we come back, we'll talk some football. Chris Landry, he knows everything about football, and you can follow him on Twitter at Landry Football, and also he's got a great website, the LandryFootball.com. Two great ways to keep up with one of the most knowledgeable guys in the game. He is Chris Landry. He's going to join us after we take this time out on your voice for the Cardinals and Blues, KMOX.
Hey guys, this is Alex.
And Amy.
And we are back with another season of Wendy's Week in Hockey, but now a new time, Monday nights from 7 to 9 o'clock.
Join us for Blues Conversation, player and coach interviews, NHL roundups, and more. We'll take you inside the locker room and around the league.
All of that comes your way every Monday night on your home for the best Blues coverage, KMOX.
Welcome back, everybody. It's 11:33, and we are going to talk football with one of my favorites. It is Chris Landry, and you can read him at LandryFootball.com. You can also follow him on Twitter at LandryFootball. Chris, good morning, sir. It's good to visit with you.
Mike, it's good to catch up with you again. Hope all is well.
I have not one complaint to lodge, and I just want to talk some football with you. We're in the middle of, I guess they say it's the upset season or the season of the upset, but but is it really? Or are we just having teams that because they have a ranking in front of their name, somebody forgot to look at the other opponent and realize that they're pretty good also?
Well, I think people they have perceptions about how good a team is, and a lot of it is skewed on who you play. You can only play who you play, and I know as a scout, breaking these games down on tape, you look and you see certain things, but you want to see it against, you know, better opponents, different opponents, and you just don't know until you go. For example, Clemson, what I've noticed with Clemson, and I've tweeted it out, and we've broken it down on LandryFootball.com. Look, they're extremely talented, as talented as anybody, right up there with Alabama. But they're not as disciplined, they're not as focused, and they make a lot of dumb mistakes for a really good team. I saw it against Boston College when that game was 7-7 in the middle of the fourth quarter. Well, if you do that consistently, Mike, at some point, somebody's going to get you. Well, it got them this week at Syracuse. And Washington State, I think, was exposed a little bit. Washington doesn't have a very good offense. You know, I think you go through Auburn had a coaching meltdown in the second half.
Oh, yeah.
They just did an awful job coaching. So, yeah, you never know what you're going to get. And it doesn't really matter if you're the better team. What matters is, are you the better team that plays the best that day? If you do, then you take care of business. And that's what separates Alabama from everyone else. Yeah, they're the most talented. Yes, they're the best coach. But they're also the most focused. It's not how good your good games are. It's how good your average games are, or your less than your good games are. It's how consistent you are, and that's what separates Alabama, you know, from the rest, and why that, you know, they're not up and down. They're there all the time. So as we look at these other teams, hey, it's how good is this team? How good is that team? Well, so far, so good. But let's stay tuned to next week, is what I always say.
You know, when you talk about Alabama, Nick Saban's got to love what's going on with these upsets, because now that gives him even more ammunition to sell his own players about not taking anything for granted.
That's right. And, you know, he does the best job of getting his team to play to a standard, whereas a Clemson, for example, plays up and down to the level of competition. You know, they played an A&M team last week, Alabama did, that, you know, was kind of within 8 points. I got to tell you, no one will admit it in Aggieland. They were saying, whoa. I mean, that was a boost of confidence that they were, you know, somewhat competitive, even though they never threatened to beat them. That was a big boost and gave them a lot of confidence as A&M played Florida this last night. I think that has a lot to do with it, is, you know, their consistency of focus to, you know, I mean, you're watching the game. They're blowing out Arkansas last night. They give up a touchdown. He's not worried about the fact that Arkansas scored. What he's worried about is guys didn't do what they were supposed to do, and they lost focus in a moment that, hey, he's got to coach through that. They're always coaching, because in what he'll tell them is, look, if you don't play that right, if you don't use the right hand to press the guy coming off the line of scrimmage, you know, you're going to develop bad habits. And then when you're in a game that's a one-possession game, it could end up costing you. So do it right every time. Stay focused. Stay in the moment. Don't worry about the good play or the bad play that happened the play before. What you're doing now, and he does the best of that than anybody, and that's why he wins a national championship every other year.
Let's talk about coaches in the SEC. You mentioned the meltdown with Auburn. When you look at Auburn, Tennessee, A&M, LSU, and Arkansas, and I'll throw Missouri in just for argument's sake, all those guys are in trouble.
Tennessee is in the worst trouble. Butch Jones is, you mentioned, is, you know, think about this. Tennessee in the last 10 years has one winning SEC record in the SEC.
And they get all the blue chip players.
Well, they get a lot of them, and they just, he is definitely gone. You know, I think that there's, I can tell you that the loss yesterday did not sit well with the Auburn faction. Now, we're still talking about a pretty good team. We'll see how that'll play out. A&M has become a little toxic, but I can tell you, Kevin Sumlin has got this team playing very
coach.
Good ball.
Yeah, you know what? He's turned that thing around. especially at the beginning of the year with all the things that were going on and off the field. He's found a way to focus, and I think that they make a big mistake if they let him go.
Well, and he might, to be honest with you, it's gotten so toxic that I'm not so sure if the right opportunity comes along that he might want to leave. So yeah. I think that is something to keep in mind. We don't know there. You know, Ole Miss, I expect to make a move with Matt Luke, but you know, maybe they stay with him. If he wins a couple more games, maybe they stay with him in an interim role. If they can't get the right guy, they're going to have to give a 7-year contract because they're going to get hit with probation in November. Mm-hmm. So they'll see how that plays out. And then Brett Bielema, you've got a huge
Goner
buyout, but you know, the buyout's, you know, not going to be as much. But Jeff Long doesn't want to fire him, the athletic director. So do they fire both of them? We'll see how they finish up the rest of the year will determine his faith. But and then Mizzou, you know, I'm on record at saying that I don't think that Barry Odom is a guy that is certainly would not have been the direction I would have gone if I were Mizzou. But they certainly played well. Last night was a better performance. But they have to decide administratively. Is this the guy to lead them into the future? Can he recruit at a level that can compete, you know, at least in the middle of the East of the SEC? They've got to make that decision, and, you know, it probably will determine a lot on who they could consider the buyout as low. So they have a decision there. But, yeah, there could be a lot of movement and turnover this year, no question about it.
Now, with that said, and we just talked about one conference, with that said, give me some names that the athletic directors are starting to covet right now if they have to make a move. Who are some of the guys that are going to be out there? And because of the money that's being made by these coaches, you know, you mentioned Summerlin. Summerlin's making a lot of money, so he doesn't have to take any job. He can sit it out and find something that's going to be conducive to him. Along with this, with the way things went down with him, how are you going to convince a quality coach to come to your program after you saw how another guy was treated?
Well, it's a true point, although a lot of coaches feel like, you know, that guy didn't do a very good job and I can do a better job. So there is some of that goes on. You know, really, there's a lot of good candidates. Now, it really depends upon, of you know, what you speak. If, you know, Ole Miss or Missouri, it's a different job than Texas A&M. I think that Texas A&M, what they're willing to pay and what they're willing to do. Tennessee, those jobs are more well thought of among coaches. So there's a possibility that they could lure somebody to one of those places. I don't know if a Dan Mullen, for example, would leave Mississippi State for Tennessee. But, you know, he'd, I think, at least give it consideration. He certainly wouldn't leave Mississippi State to go to Ole Miss or to Missouri. A guy like a Jeff Brohm at Purdue, he is certainly someone that has been coveted and well-liked. Would he leave Purdue after 1 year? I'm not sure. Mike Bobo at Colorado State's a guy that would be a nice fit. Chad Morris at SMU. Neil Brown at Troy. You know, I think Sonny Dykes, who's at an offensive analyst at TCU, you know, another good candidate. And then you've got some guys that I think that are maybe at a different level that might consider. I mean, would Texas A&M, they're going to fish in deep waters. Scott Woodard, the athletic director there, is going to call Chris Peterson at Washington, who he hired there. He's not going to get him, but he'll make that call. And a guy like Gary Patterson might leave TCU to go to A&M. Wouldn't leave a lot of places, but he might do that. You know, DJ Durkin of Maryland. There are a number of guys that I love. Kyle Whittingham. Are you going to get him? He's Mormon. He's from Utah. Probably not going to leave the state, but might consider, you know, for the right situation. You know, those are some of the names I think that would be on the short list of, depending upon, again, which job you're trying to hire for.
Chris Landry is with us. You can follow him at Landry Football on Twitter and also his great website, LandryFootball.com. All right, Chris, final question for you. With the upsets that we've had a chance to watch, with the exception of Alabama, are we going to have a team in the Final Four with at least two losses?
We could. It really depends. Don't know until how the rest of this season plays out. For example, you know, the Big Ten, how's it going to play out? Is one of those teams going to sweep? Penn State going to sweep Ohio State, Michigan, or Ohio State's going to do it? Or, you know, I don't think it's going to be Michigan. But, you know, I think that that we could see, I still think it's very likely that Clemson runs the table and wins the ACC with one loss. So we might, as it gets down towards the end, we might not have but just one unbeaten team. If that, TCU, I would suspect, is probably going to lose. And again, the Big Ten, Wisconsin might run the table in the West, but will they win the Big Ten championship game, you know, with one loss? So I think it's possible, but I still think the odds are that we're going to have one-loss champions enough to fill the four spots. And, you know, who knows how it'll play out. But just, you know, if Clemson wins out, let's say a Penn State ends up as a one-loss champion, and then you're trying to compare the possibility of would you take, and this would be maybe more interesting, is do you have a one-loss team? What if Georgia goes unbeaten and just say and plays Alabama closely but loses? Would they get maybe that fourth seed in the playoffs over a one-loss champion at another league? Don't know. Don't know what the committee is going to do, but there's a lot of football left to be played. And from my viewpoint, I look at these teams on film every week doing my scouting work that I do for teams and coaching and scouting consulting work, and I see these teams, and they're different. You know, what you see in week two is not what you see in week six or eight. And, you know, Georgia looks like the second best team in the country right now. They didn't look like it in the first half against Missouri last night, but they're pretty good. But is that going to continue throughout the rest of the season? You know, what's Penn State going to do this week against Michigan and going forward? Can Ohio State get their offense improved? I mean, a lot of questions still need to be answered yet.
Well, we'll just have to watch and see.
You bet.
Hey, Chris, as always, it's great to visit with you, man.
Good catching up with you, buddy.
Keep up the great work. LandryFootball.com. You can also follow Chris at LandryFootball on Twitter. Let's stay in touch, man. We'll talk soon.
You bet. Take care,
buddy. All right,
everybody.
Chris Landry, we'll take a break. We'll come back. Baseball and Bob Nightingale. He finishes out the hour after we come back from this commercial break.
Welcome back to the Dave Sinclair Lincoln and Ford Sports on a Sunday morning on America's Sports Voice, KMOX.
Final segment, and we're going to end it with Bob Nightingale, the USA Today, who was so happy because when he gets tired of watching the Cubs and the Dodgers in L.A. and Chicago, he can go to New York and hang out and go to Houston. Robert, I'm assuming you're in L.A.
I am in L.A., Rick.
Let's talk a little bit about yesterday. First of all, the news that Corey Seager's not going to be available for the series. What sort of impact is that going to eventually have on the Dodgers, who a lot of people think are pretty deep already? But when you lose a guy like Seager, that's saying a lot.
Yeah, you know, it had been the wrist that had hurt him before. Now it's the back. You know, and they clinched early over the Diamondbacks. So for him to be out for five straight days, it's still be in that much pain. You know, it shows you how bad it is. They think if they win, he'd be okay for the World Series. You know, but we'll see.
Hey, what about last night? Joe Maddon was upset with the play at the plate. You know Joe like I do. I think sometimes Joe will find something to create more attention toward him and take it off of his players. Did you smell a little bit of that last night?
Oh, definitely. I mean, here's a team that went 18 up, 18 down to end the game. You know, the bullpen was perfect throughout the first five innings, but even before that, Kershaw retired the last six. So they looked abysmal. In the bullpen, you know, got beat up on. So every single, I think all but two questions of Joe were about the play at the plate. And, yeah, I mean, the rule kind of stinks anyway.
Yeah.
But that being said, I mean, okay, the Dodgers would have won 4-2 instead of 5-2.
You know, I know you were over in L.A. watching that series, but Jose Altuve, best player that nobody talks a great deal about. He's probably the most valuable player in the American League. And that play yesterday was almost Enos Slaughter-like, going from first to home on a play that he probably should have held at third. But I give Gary Pettis credit for bringing him around because he knew the situation. And, man, third base coaches are so important in knowing what the other guy can and can't do.
Yeah, they really are. And Pettis is a great, great guy. Aggressive play. But hey, two outs, when I take the chance.
Yeah.
And you know, that'd be a perfect play. It was a nice throw. Sanchez could hang on to it. But yeah, you're right about Altuve. You know, I mean, there's been so much talk, particularly in New York, you know, that MVP should go to Aaron Judge. Aaron Judge had a good season, but for 6 weeks he was nowhere to be found.
Yeah.
Where Altuve was great from day one of the season to the very end.
Hey, we're going to have some manager openings in baseball. What are you hearing on that front?
You know, I still like Ron Gardenhire, the former Twins manager, and up in Boston. You know, everybody talks about Alex Cora. That's a tough place. That was the toughest place in baseball to manage. So I can't see you bringing a first-year manager in there. So I like Cora there. I mean, I'm sorry, I like Gardenhire there. With the Mets, I could easily see Alex Cora at that place. You know, Philadelphia is rebuilding. You know, who knows? Maybe a Mike Redmond type of guy. And then in Detroit, I got to think Freddy Gonzalez is going to be a front runner there.
Yeah, Freddy's a good baseball man. He has done a nice job in the places that he's been. I don't know if they've got enough talent, though, for Freddy, though. They've kind of gutted that thing a little bit, and they've got some young players, but I don't know if they're going to be able to compete. So that's something you got to take into account.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it's going to be you're absolutely right. I mean, it's going to be a bad team for a while. I mean, maybe a good 3 or 4 years, it's going to be a bad team. So it's just, you know, you want to manage your job that bad because you're going to have to take maybe one of the worst jobs in baseball.
Let's talk locally a little bit about the Cardinals. Give me your thoughts. You saw them enough, and give me your thoughts on the priorities for the offseason and list the needs and who would fit some of those needs.
Well, I think the big thing is just that the two pieces, you got to get a closer and you got to get a big bat. Closer, I think it's really one of two choices. You know, Greg Holm is going to opt out of his contract with the Rockies, and Wade Davis of the Cubs. Both are great closers, both kind of Midwestern type of guys that, you know, they love that lifestyle. Either would come to St. Louis. So I think one of those two guys for sure.
Would you sign Nicasio also? I think you need 1.5 closers these days, the way managers use their bullpen. I think you got to have another guy out there who has closing experience also. So would you re-sign him too?
Oh, I definitely would. And he's a great guy, as you get to know. But yeah, I think he's more of a setup guy, really. Mm-hmm. I would not trust him to be your ninth inning guy all the time. But yeah, I agree with you. I mean, you need some studs at the back end. And all those teams that win, like look at the Yankees, they got guys with closing experience. So yeah, I would definitely bring back Nicasio as well.
What about on the bat front?
Yeah, there. You know, you're kind of thinking two guys. You know, J.D. Martinez, who had such a monster second half with the Diamondbacks, or Giancarlo Stanton. And yeah, no, Stanton would rather go to California, where the Giants can grab him. But if you're Stanton, you want out so bad. It kind of reminds me of Justin Verlander. Yeah, Houston wasn't his first choice. You want to go to New York or L.A., you know, even Chicago. But I said you either want to be traded or not. So he jumped on it. And I think the same thing with Stanton. He's so miserable there, and he doesn't want to be part of their rebuilding plan.
What about Donaldson? Yeah. Is he part of the equation?
Yeah, Donaldson too. I mean, the only bad part about Donaldson, we got him for 1 year, but Donaldson's perfect. And Donaldson's got the same agent as Manny Machado. So I use Donaldson for that 1 year bridge.
and then go get Machado.
get Machado, every penny you have for Machado. I think Machado is a perfect Cardinal, and spend the rest of his career there. I think he's and Donaldson's perfect for that clubhouse culture too. Just a fiery, emotional guy who could care less what the opposition thinks about him. He's really old school.
Final question for Bob Nightingale. You talk about clubhouse culture. Has that changed in your opinion over the last few years? You're in enough clubhouses. There are a lot of things that have changed with regard to what players do and don't do. How much of that have you seen, though?
Yeah, I've seen a lot of it. It's just, you know, people are afraid to make enemies. They're more worried about their brand, really, than being liked or disliked. You know, even last night, that play at the plate with Culberson, someone says, well, what if the rules were the same? What would you have done there? Would you have knocked over the catcher? He says, oh, no, I still would have slid around him and tacked it. You know, I mean, who does that?
Exactly.
You know, it's just, it has changed a lot. That's where when guys like Donaldson He's just a regular hard-nosed, fiery player. That's why a guy like him stands out when he shouldn't stand out, but he does.
Mm-hmm. Hey, Bob, I know just a little early out in L.A., I'll let you get a little shut eye or whatever you do out in L.A. There's plenty to do, as you probably well know. But more importantly, we thank you for your time, and we'll see you when you get back to St. Louis when all this hoopla is over. By the way, I think our two teams have now been eliminated, so who do you like at this point?
Yeah, I kind of like the Astros. I really thought that the two best teams in baseball were Cleveland and Houston.
Yeah, I thought it was Cleveland and Washington.
Yeah, you know, Houston's so good. I thought Washington's best team in the National League, and that was tough. You know, I was up there for that series. And even the Cubs, you know, they said, we try to do everything possible to give them game five, and they wouldn't take it. And the Nationals, you know, particularly Dusty Baker, you know, just kind of can't believe how poorly they played. I thought they would give the Dodgers absolute fits, where I don't think the Cubs had the firepower to push over the Dodgers.
Bob, we're out of time. As always, we thank you for yours, sir, and enjoy the postseason.
All right. Thank you, Mike.
All right. That's Bob Nightingale. We are just about out of time. I want to thank everybody for participating and listening. Don't forget, coming up in just a bit, it'll be Michael Calhoun and Travis Sheridan with Nothing Impossible on Your Voice for the Cardinals and St. Louis Blues. KMOX, have a great afternoon, everyone.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.